Hello, I'm Angela Walsh. Welcome to the Downhill Slide, Perspectives on Life from the Over 50s. This chat is with Lois. It was recorded in January 2021. We talked about many things, including menopause, and whether the change makes us calmer, or is it just age giving us more self-control for those of us who have managed some self-control. So we talk about many things, including her career and what she's doing now. I think sometimes she was holding back, for sure, holding back, but I'm very grateful for what she did discuss and what she did share. Thank you for coming to speak with me
Thank
today.
You for having me, Angela.
I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on life and the meaning of the universe and all things fabulous. So tell me first, don't pull that face. What's the face for?
No reason. Continue.
All right. This is my theory that once you get to the age of 50, that midway kind of point, everything sort of changes in your life. Now, particularly perhaps for women, I'm thinking the whole menopause thing, because some women go through that earlier than later, but it just seems to be that point of that 50 point, everything changes. You're not 40 anymore. It's the way people are with you. It's the way you are with yourself. What do you think?
I do agree wholeheartedly. I think menopause can affect women differently, certainly, but some of us in more ways than one, and in some cases worse than others. The midpoint, assuming we live to 100, yes, 50 is the midpoint. I'm not sure that I'm going to have that sort of longevity.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
I'm not sure that I am, really. But there are a lot of changes, and I don't think it's just menopause. I think for myself, heading towards the next decade, very shortly, it's about having a change in life that is positive. I'm at a stage where I don't need to work to the same degree that I have done in the past, and so I'm looking at doing completely different things. So it's more for me another stage, and I love the fact that you've called this the downhill slide, but I'm not sure that I agree with it. I'm not sure that it is a downhill slide. I think it's just a stage that we're all going to get to, and we should embrace it as being a change. It's something different. It's another part of our lives, another chapter, if you like.
So what have been parts of your chapters of life? What were you, you're working part-time. You're not working now.
No.
What were you doing?
My career has been wholeheartedly in hospitality, and for the last 30 years was as a teacher in the TAFE system.
Did you enjoy teaching?
Very much, yes. Yes, very much. So you were asking about the stages. So the stages being, you know, the growing up, the going to school, the going to college and university, the getting married, the having children, amongst that, I had a career for quite a number of years in hospitality, I don't know, 45, something like that. And it was all very exciting. And yes, I thoroughly enjoyed teaching. I was a head teacher for quite a number of those years. And that brought all sorts of administrative roles, which were different, very exciting in lots of other ways. But certainly teaching is giving, it's sharing your knowledge, it's sharing your expertise, and very, very enjoyable.
Did it change a lot over the years?
The systems changed around it. The actual teaching per se didn't. Students, I guess, changed in various ways from year to year. At the beginning of each year, we had to learn a new vocabulary, so to speak, because English is a living language, and youngsters are very good at changing the English language. Not that all my students, of course, were youngsters, because TAFE is very much about adult education, so anything from the age of 16 to 75.
I think TAFE's a fantastic organisation, fantastic. It's especially from that perspective of all ages can embrace it and learn something new or be better at what they're already doing. But also it is that more one-on-one, isn't it, with TAFE?
Yeah, in terms of class sizes and so on, generally it was. It's not so much these days because, of course, we've moved into the IT era, and a lot of things are online.
Right.
So more and more there is less face-to-face contact, which has meant a big change.
How do you feel about that?
Personally, I think it's an enormous loss, particularly in the majority of TAFE courses, because TAFE is also about hands-on skills. Mm. So hospitality being, you know, front of house, service, cooking, etc. It's pretty hard to do that online.
Mm.
So that loss of face-to-face, I think, is very detrimental.
Do they teach it at TAFE in hospitality? Do they teach how to deal with customers who are really rude or demanding?
Yeah, we did. We did. And we did quite a lot of role plays based on that. And quite often it was very successful. Other times it wasn't. I think a lot about hospitality that needs to be embraced is that it's innate. A good hospitality, a person who is good at their job in hospitality has innate skills. You can teach a lot of additional skills, but being good with customers, being good with people is not necessarily something that's innate.
Mm, okay. Is it difficult to teach people to be patient with difficult customers?
Yes, if they don't have some of those basic patience skills, mm. Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
Did you fail anyone because of that?
Now, that would be giving secrets away.
Ah, right. Now, I know that you've done a bit of travelling in your life. Mm. What was your favourite place to go? Or be?
No, Angela, I don't have any truly favourite places because I've been so fortunate to go to so many places and I've enjoyed all of them. I can't think of a single place that I haven't enjoyed. And that could be because it was beautiful, because the weather was nice, because the people I was with were exceptional, because the experiences were exceptional. There's just so much to travelling that is not black and white, I think. And I've certainly been very spoilt, very blessed at the number of
go
countries
with blessed.
I've been able to be.
Go with blessed. So name some places that you've been that have been quite interesting.
Well, around Australia, I've seen a lot around Australia, and I think there are quite a few people now who are going to be experiencing more of Australia than perhaps they thought they ever would because of the COVID situation. We've got some very, very exciting places here in Australia. Palm Valley in the middle of Australia. Howard Springs, as it was. I think it's changed quite a bit now. Kakadu National Park is just majestic. Just superb. So lots and lots of places in Australia. In Europe, I've been fortunate enough to go to 7 or 8 countries there. And, of course, the main thing to experience there that has been most enjoyable is the scenery and the history. We don't have the same degree of, I have to be careful what I say here, because, of course, we've got a very, very long history. But in terms of buildings and structures and beauty, what we see in Europe is nothing like anything we have here.
Yeah, you're talking architecture mainly there, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And those sorts of things. I think the great thing about COVID is that it's making people think differently about our own country and maybe think harder about our own country and what's going on here, what's been going on here, the Indigenous culture, Indigenous spaces, sacred places, things like that. They have more meaning now, I think, than ever. Do you agree?
I do, and I think that it is, as you say, it's making us realise and hopefully youngsters realise the history that we do have in this country, the beauty that there is out there and the culture which we know, I certainly knew very little about. I knew nothing about it before I moved here. And really, it's only been in the last decade or 2 decades that I've been more aware of it, learnt more about it, and been more interested in it. But I think we've all got a long way to go on that.
Of course we have. Of course we have. That's obvious because this is being recorded the day before Australia Day, and there's a lot of discussion about moving the day from January 26, what it means for different people. It's super political and it's difficult to know where to stand on that because, well, I've won. All I want is everybody to be happy and get along. That's it. So how do you make that happen?
I don't know how you make it happen. I think that our focus needs to be on conciliation rather than continuing in any shape or form, whether it's deliberate or not, on continuing the divide that appears to be there between those that support Australia Day versus those that don't support Australia Day. Whether the date is really that important, I'm not sure. I wouldn't like to make a judgment on that, but we certainly should be focusing on conciliation rather than anything else, and I wish we could see a little bit more of that.
There's a lot of aggression around. Do you think we are more aggressive or less? Because I kind of had this vision of humanity as we progress along the evolutionary line that we would be more spiritual, that would be kinder to each other, the aggression would become less. I don't know that that's happening.
No, I don't think it is either. Is it more? Are we more aggressive? Physically, maybe. Verbally, yes. Because, of course, we can consider aggression in both of those ways, physical and verbal. Verbal aggression, I think, is more pronounced than it has been in the past, yes.
And are you saying that front-on aggression, or are you talking about social media being a bit of a demon?
Both. The ability that social media has given people to be passively aggressive, as in unknown aggressive, trolling, etc., and they can stand back and they can say whatever they want without actually having to front the situation or to front the person to be able to really engage in decent conversation, problem solving, etc. So the aggression is really, it's hidden, I suppose, is the way of putting it. And that's not healthy.
No, I don't think it is. I understand anger. I understand that kind of pain that drives you to say something nasty because you want to hurt someone because you don't want to feel the pain you're feeling, so you want somebody else to feel that pain. I get it. But to actually enact it is another thing.
It's another step, I suppose, yes.
Is it easier, do you think, as you get older, to quell those passions?
No, not necessarily.
Depends on whether you've worked through it in your time.
I would need some more time to think about answering that one. I'm not sure. I don't think aggression is necessarily quelled as you get older, depending on what your circumstances are. I guess that's why I need a bit more time to think about it. I'd like to think it was, but I'm not sure that it is.
Yeah. It's a question I want answered. So far I'm not getting, anybody I speak with, I'm not getting that answer because it doesn't seem to change with age. It's just your choice whether you decide to
act.
Yeah, let it take you over or not. It's the same going back to the topic of menopause. Mm. The fury that was within me at times during the menopause, during the change itself, like it was surprised me.
It's horrendous.
It was awful. And I just had to check myself going, whoa, what's that?
Yeah. I think it can be very horrendous. So the anger within and whether we change as we get older, I think has got probably an awful lot to do with our ability to control oneself. And I think for myself, menopause took away that control. Scarily.
Yeah.
Very scarily. Yeah. It took away that control for quite some time.
Geez, lucky men don't go through it.
Or do they?
Well, I've heard tales. Yeah. I've heard tales. So I wanted to play you something. I heard this. This just made me laugh because it's kind of the way I feel about things. There's a comedian. He did a piece, I found it on YouTube, and you can watch it, the full thing on CBC Comedy on YouTube. It was from December in 2018. His name is Lachlan Patterson. And so he was doing this comedy routine about what life is going to be like 50 years from now. Because he was saying the elderly people now know how to tell a good story. You look at a picture, you look at a photograph. Oh, there was this event that happened all this time ago, and there was actually a story attached. So elderly people at this time have interesting stories to tell. However, in 50 years' time, it might not be the same. So just have a little listen to this.
Can you imagine listening to the stories of old people's photos 50 years from now? How terrible that experience is going to be? What's this, Grandma? Here's a picture of my breakfast. What? What a breakfast. And here are some shoes I once thought about buying. And here is the wing of a plane. And here is the weather forecast. And here is a picture of your great-grandmother staring at herself in the bathroom mirror. And here are 12 more of that exact same photo.
I just thought that was hilarious. Lachlan Patterson, very, very funny. So that's a couple of years old now. But how do you feel about that? Do you think that's going to be true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I look back through photos that I've taken on my phone, and I'm not a very big photograph taker. I don't do it a lot. But I have. I've got repeats. I've got pictures of screenshots. I've got screenshots. I've got, pictures of myself, which is really unusual because I'm not into selfies at all, not compared to the youngsters of today. I'm sure if we looked at my daughter's photos, they would just be one after the other of themselves. Yes, that's very true. So what content is there going to be in the photos that will be a topic of conversation? I think that's a really good question.
And are they going to be able to tell the story?
Yeah.
Because once upon a time, like I think about my grandmother, my best friend, can't spend any time with her, but when we used to talk, you would hear stories without her even trying. She wasn't a natural storyteller. It wasn't like that. It was just that she had the information to tell because that's how they shared the information. Mm. Again, referring to our Indigenous population, word of mouth. It's the stories are told.
Mm, that's how it went down.
That's how it's shared.
Having said that, my husband's a very big photograph taker and he can tell a story about most of his photographs.
Yeah.
But they're not of himself and they're not screenshots. They are of, useful things, generally speaking, scenery, etc.
Most of the time.
Yeah, not all the time. Most of the time. But then he's a good storyteller, so.
Do you have children yourself? Have you encouraged stories in them? Have you encouraged them to embrace more than perhaps what just society is giving them?
Well, I'm not sure if I have. Maybe that would be a question for them. I'd like to think I have. We did a lot of storytelling as when they were young. Whether they have embraced that to look beyond, as you suggested, I'm not sure. I think that would be a question for them.
What about youth as a whole? Do you fear for them going into the future? And now that we've had the COVID, and how do you find it? Do you think the young ones, and I'm talking about those in their 20s, do you think they're going to be all right?
I think some of them will be. I think some of our youngsters are very, very resilient. There are others who seem far less resilient, and my experience of that, of course, will be to a greater or lesser degree through my experience as a teacher in TAFE. There were youngsters there that really were so reliant on other people to do anything and everything for them. I think they may have issues, but those youngsters who've been brought up to be resilient, who've been brought up to deal with issues, deal with problems themselves, they'll be fine, they'll survive. But I think what we're going through now for a lot of people is really testing their ability to survive in a way that they recognise rather than adapting to or in the way that we do need to adapt. The situation is very different. But having said that, our situation here in Australia is really nothing compared to so many countries in Europe that are experiencing terrible, terrible times at the moment. So that's another hard comparison that, I wouldn't really like to respond to in any great detail, but certainly needs to be considered.
Do you have a particular way of coping with things?
Probably badly.
Ah!
Possibly badly. Or not as well as I could. What am I really dealing with, though? I'm not really. There's so little change for me, yet I guess the biggest change for me in my life at the moment is not socialising as much as I used to. And there are other ways in which we can socialise. So it's really learning to embrace those other ways, you know, whether it's Zoom meetings with friends or just picking up the phone a little bit more often than you would usually. But other than that, what am I? I'm not coping with anything through COVID. It's nothing.
If you do face a crisis, how do you find you deal with that? And do you have any methods that you've learned over the years of coping, or just one foot in front of the other?
I don't know. Well, I think I have learned coping mechanisms. I don't know if I can identify them. My parents were always of the opinion that if something just got a little bit tricky, you just stood up and got on with it and didn't make a fuss. So maybe that's my technique. I'm not sure. I've never really tried to quantify it, I suppose. And that's probably it. Do I have issues with dealing with something out of the ordinary? Yes, of course I do sometimes. But most of the time, yeah, it's put one foot in front of the other and you just get on with it.
You just keep going.
Just keep going.
A lot of people are finding it difficult to do that these days, I've noticed. And yet really the circumstances that we're in, they're restraining us, but they're making our lives a little complex, I suppose. But it's not, I think we've been through worse as a community, as a country, as people. We've been through worse in the past. And I worry about those who are not dealing with a simple change like this.
I think there's very good reason to worry for people that aren't dealing with a simple change like this, because it really isn't that big a change. Generally speaking, other than, of course, and sorry, it probably sounded like as I was neglecting to mention those people that have, of course, lost their jobs, and a large number of those people are in hospitality. And they are jobs that aren't going to come back for many, many years. And so certainly they have gone through a lot, are going through a lot. But again, it's about being adaptable. It's about knowing that those jobs aren't coming back and being able to change career, change job path. And try and move on to something that is going to be more sustainable.
Mm. Yeah.
Which I know is not easy for everybody. And again, I've come across this quite a lot in the past, where people aren't accepting of change at all, whether it's this sort of change that we're going through at the moment or any other type of change that they have to experience. So there's not one size fits all, and so there's not going to be one easy answer for everybody.
I think that's actually the key there, is that you've got to find what's going to work for you, but know that you will absolutely be able to move forward. You will absolutely be able to find some way of paying the bills, of getting by, of connecting with other people. It's just different to what it was. So you've just got to keep looking and finding that way.
And the government are doing an awful lot to be supportive. And, of course, the other ways in which people can be supported is through those who are volunteering their time to assist people in need, and whether that's, you know, because they're lonely and just need someone to sit with them, or a youngster who needs to be, you know, given a little bit of motivation to do something different and be shown a few different avenues down which they can go to, you know, pursue another career or to find a job, or at least start looking for another job. And sometimes getting that information through to those people that need it is the hardest bit. Letting them know what is available to them out there in that big wide world of ours, in that big country of ours.
And again, this is where you can look to what's gone in the past, the older generation, to see what they did do, how they did move on, change jobs during wartime, women picking up a spanner and just suddenly becoming car mechanics.
Yeah, very good point.
That sort of thing. Tough when they had to go back then after the war was over and the men came home and they had to revert to domestic bliss or not.
Or not, as the case may be. Or but, to the fact that they'd lost their partners.
Yeah. Yeah. What do they do now? How do they keep going when society just wants to go back to what it was? And that's a good lesson, I think.
We won't be going back to how society was.
No.
Per se. That's not going to happen. Mm. So we have to adapt. We have to change. And we have to understand that things are going to be different. Maybe not that different, maybe a lot different. We don't really know, do we?
I'm going to tell you a guilty secret. When I realised the world was going to change, now this is the most possibly selfish thing ever, and I realised the world was going to change and maybe we would be cut off, borders, countries, etc. I thought, how am I going to get my coffee?
Good point.
It's wrong, isn't it? But you just think, I wanted my tea and I wanted my coffee. Where am I going to get that from?
But you're allowed to be selfish. We're all selfish at various times. We're all selfish. You're not the only one.
It's so superficial.
But it's very much a first world problem, as that saying goes. Mm. But what you're able to do is get past that and say, okay, yes, right, so I may not have my tea or coffee. Let's deal with that when we get to it. And then for you, it will be the same as for me. It'll be one step in front of the other and you will continue. You'll find a substitute.
Yeah, it's time I gave up anyway. But these are possibly the future things we'll have to deal with. Maybe not. We have no idea what's around the corner, really, do we? Now, one more thing I have to ask you. It's, of course, food. I've got to bring it up because you have a lovely figure, Lois. So I'm pretty sure you're not somebody who overindulges all the time. But I reckon I can see a glint in your eye that says you like your food. Even though you're careful, you like your food. So come on, tell me, what kind of food just does it for you?
Let me just backtrack a little bit. What you said there was you don't indulge all the time. How do you know I indulge
well,
at I don't, all?
Well, because but look at you.
But you're spot on. Of course I indulge. I love my food. I love chocolate mainly.
Yeah, see? Will we run out of chocolate, Lois? Will we?
Yes. Well, there are certain things in life that are addictive. Coffee is and chocolate is. Well, mainly the sugar in it rather than the actual chocolate, the actual cocoa. Now, I'm married to a chef, so that means that I am very spoilt in terms of good food. I'm not going to say it's 100% healthy all the time, but always good food, and I don't have any favourite dishes because I just love pretty much anything that he cooks for me.
Oh, you lucky girl.
I know, I'm very spoiled.
That's almost as good as being married to a hairdresser.
Yes. Oh. Well, but I think if we thought about it enough, we would all admit that we are privileged in many ways.
Oh.
And one of the ways in which I'm very privileged is to have food on my table two or three times a day. And not cooked for me every day, three meals a day, because I do a little bit of cooking myself. But that's certainly one of the privileges I appreciate and am very thankful for.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I found out that recently Lois has taken up painting and she's actually very good. I love it when people embrace their creative side, even if they've never done it before, and just give it a go. Now I'm going to play some more music from Angus Murray. This is a bit of a song he's written called Hero. Thanks for listening.
What if I can't be your hero?